I know we had a podcast just last week. I know it's not scheduled until December 26th. But who's going to be listening on December 26th? Really, we'll all be recovering from all of the festivities of the day before. We'll still be playing with our toys and our putting on our socks and, you know, that sort of thing. Oh, that bell is going to drive me freaking nuts. Anyway, welcome to a special holiday edition of Off-Road. Because we have a scheduled podcast for December 26th, I said to myself, there's no sense putting out a podcast then. Who'll be listening? And yes, I know we just had a podcast last week with Mr. Bobby Cook, and no, I don't want to take anything away from that. I don't want to distract people from that. If you haven't heard last week's podcast with Bobby Cook, go listen to it now. Shut me off right now. I'm not important. The interview with Bobby Cook was important. And then come back, and while you're making your Christmas nog or whatever you're making, your Hanukkah holly or whatever you're doing, come and listen to this podcast just for some fun. It's just me and Sabrina, who is our Step Out with Sabrina host, and I decided let's just shoot the breeze about Christmas traditions from our family days when we were kids. And if you saw the podcast publicity slate, the promotional graphic that Gina Gandolfo creates, you saw a cute picture of Sabrina and another weird picture of some kid sitting in front of a pink Christmas tree. And that was me. And I'll tell you the story about that eventually if you listen to the podcast. Anyway, enough gabbing. Let's get right to the conversation between me and Sabrina Kawadi here on RLTP's Off-Road. Just crazy things that you might remember from your childhood. And of course, mine was way, way, way before yours. So I'm going to tell you some things that you're going to say, what? You used to do, what did you do? It's crazy stuff. But well, let's do Step Out first.
Okay. So, I mean, January, it's very cold. I feel like people maybe are looking to leave the house less.
I'm not getting off the couch, Sabrina, so you better have at least one thing that will make me at least consider going out the door.
Well, what's nice about January is I think that the theater season spaces out a little bit better. The theater kind of all gets on top of itself in November and December. I personally found it a little overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I was also performing myself, so I wasn't able to get to as many things as maybe I wanted to. But in January, it's spaced out a little nicer. Irish Classical opens, I think, on the 5th with Faith Healer, which I did not see previous iterations of, but I've heard tell. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to experiencing that for the first time. Have you seen a past production of Faith Healer at the Irish Classical?
I do not see it. And I'm very excited about this one, of course, because Paul is coming back to the Irish Classical stage, Paul Todaro,
yes,
who is just a terrific performer and one of the best directors I ever had personally. So I'm looking forward to seeing him again. He sort of gave up theater, performing theater. He's still teaching, of course, but he sort of gave it up because he's doing the Skiffle Minstrels all the time.
Right.
But how they, you know, got him to come back, I'm very, very excited about that. And I just read, tell me if you read this correctly or if I read this correctly, that Vincent is going to be in it.
I did see that.
I hope he's okay, because when I saw him recently, he was so good. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting over all of his maladies, mm-hmm, all of his problems, and he looked terrific. But then I thought, is he terrific enough to get back on stage? And apparently he is.
I am very excited to see that.
To see him back on stage.
And Paul was actually my teacher. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not know that.
So I met Paul as just my professor, and then sure, I sort of learned about his history and everything. So I don't know that I've ever seen him perform, like, other than in class, you know, like.
Oh, sure.
Teacher mode. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Any show that Paul was in, it was worth seeing. And he was like a generation behind me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least a generation younger than I. But all of a sudden, when he hit the scene, he was in a lot of different things all at once. And he was everywhere, and always a terrific performance. Always.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that. because I like seeing things I don't know much about. You know, I like being able to go in and be surprised. So kind of in that same vein, the Lancaster Opera House is doing Rehearsal for Murder, which is another one I've never seen, don't know anything about. I guess the premise is that it's opening night of a new Broadway play and the lead actress kills herself over some bad reviews.
I've had that feeling.
Yeah, you know, we can all relate. We can all relate. But so her fiance, playwright, invites all the suspects to an empty theater to read his new play and kind of locks them in until the truth comes out.
Have you heard of the play before?
No, I literally never even heard the title, which is kind of not to say I know all the plays, but that's a little rare that I've never even heard of it. So yes. I did a little Google and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. So I'm looking forward to experiencing that.
Do we know anybody who's in it?
No, I don't. I know people who were in callbacks for it, but I'm not sure. Maybe I'll text them after this to find out how that transpired.
Not important. But yeah, that's an interesting sounding plot anyway.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then, I mean, this might be a little bit of my bias showing, but Anne of Green Gables at Theater of Youth opens at the end of January.
Oh,
and
good.
That's a modern adaptation by Buffalo's own Donna Hope. No stranger to the role of Travels.
What was the name again? Donna what?
Donna Hoke.
Hoke.
H-O-K-E.
H-O-K-E. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look that up. I'm not sure I'm familiar with that person. Anyway, let me ask you this. Do you know anything about the production? Are they going to be doing what they did pre-COVID? Are they going to be doing daytime shows for schools? Because everybody has had to adjust schedules, and the Toy especially was affected by the fact that they couldn't do daytime productions for schools because there were no field trips anymore. Do you know if they're going to be doing it again as field trips?
Yes. So, I mean, their most recent production, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, had many school shows.
Great.
And in fact, I had asked if I could possibly attend one of them because of my crazy schedule. Then I ended up being able to go on a weekend, so it was fine. But she's like, oh, no, it's full. Like, you know, it's at capacity.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Schools are coming back, which is so wonderful to hear. And the weekend I was there was decently well attended, I'd say, for a weekend in December, and the kids were loving it.
That's great.
It was nice to see children back at Toy and having a good time. So I'm excited that they're doing a three-show season this season. And I'm particularly excited for this, obviously, because, you know, it's Donna Hoke, but also because I just love when playwrights breathe fresh life into a classic story. I think it's one of the best ways the classics endure and maintain relatability. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited I've read it, but I'm excited for everyone else to experience what she's done with it. And Annette Daniels Taylor's direction too.
And it's always nice to give a new kid, an opportunity to stretch her legs. So this is an adaptation of the original Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah. I mean, not dissimilar from Little Women Now in the sense that it follows the original story, but Little Women Now she brought it into the
modern times, yes,
very present day. And this she has updated the time period, but I think only to maybe the 70s.
Okay.
So it is updated from the original time period, but not to the present day. It's still a period piece.
I gotcha.
Still considered, yeah. But I think that people who love the story will find that sense of familiarity and be able to recognize all the things they love. Mm-hmm. And people who are unfamiliar with it, I think it will be a good introduction.
And it's great. If I can just plug Toy again, I'm so happy that they're back up on their feet doing this because, as you know, these are our future theater goers.
Right.
This is where you introduce kids to theater, and this is where they first get a taste of the excitement of live performance. And I've done one show at Toy, and just to look out at the audience and see all those kids with this gaga look on their face, can't believe that they're seeing this right before their eyes. I'm very happy that Toy has weathered the storm and is coming back to their original mission of entertaining children and creating the audiences of the future.
Well said. I don't really have anything to add to that. I agree with you.
Well, it's near and dear to my heart. And every performer in Buffalo has seen something at Toy at one point or another.
Right.
Yes, that's where I first saw such and such. And that's where I fell in love with theater. And the same is true of the audiences.
Gosh, I saw Amy Jakiel in Bridge to Terabithia on a school field trip. Yep. And then, you know, years later, I'm in shows with Amy Jakiel and working at People Inc. with Amy Jakiel. So I'm still remembering the lyrics to the song she sang about running, you know?
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Are you a fan of Stained Glass, Peter?
Well, who isn't? a fan of stained glass. You can't be raised a Catholic in this city with all of these churches and not be a fan of stained glass. This shirt I'm wearing right now. No, that's not true. Tell me all about stained glass.
I thought you might say something like that. So if you're looking to get off the couch, only through January 14th, it's running right now, though, so you have some time. There's an exhibit at the Buffalo History Museum called On the Shoulders of Giants, Innovation in American Stained Glass. And it's a collaboration between the History Museum and the Stained Glass Association of America for its 120th anniversary. And so that's pretty spectacular. I saw some pictures.
All right. I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to promise you I will get off the couch for that.
This is a step out with Sabrina first. You're promising on the spot.
I'm telling you right now, first of all, I love the Buffalo History Museum. And second of all, who doesn't love stained glass? But I will definitely, definitely go see that. Which reminds me, let me ask you this question. Because I interviewed the lady from, her name is something Brown. I can't remember her first name. I interviewed the lady from the Buffalo History Museum. And at the time, I wasn't sure of the answer to this question. Let me see if you know the answer or if I can perform it for you properly. I have to perform this question. Is it the Buffalo History Museum or is it the Buffalo History Museum? I'll repeat it. Mm-hmm. Is it the Buffalo History Museum or is it the Buffalo History Museum?
I think the first one.
It's the second one.
Really?
Unless I've performed it incorrectly. It is not a history museum that happens to be in Buffalo. It is a museum about Buffalo's history. Maybe I said it wrong.
Oh.
It's a Buffalo History Museum. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do.
It's a museum about Buffalo history. I didn't know that.
I did know that, but I didn't realize that's what you were asking. But
well,
I did know
clearly
that,
I performed the question incorrectly.
No, because now knowing that was your question, I hear what you were doing, but I just mm-hmm. thought you were sort of placing emphasis in different spots. I wasn't totally sure why.
Yeah, but, and apparently the lady who I interviewed, who was a lovely person and did a great interview, I interviewed her during COVID because I said, what are you guys doing?
Right.
But anyway, I asked the same question of her, and she gave me the same reaction, which is, I'm not sure. Then I explained what I was really getting at, mm-hmm. you know, because as an actor, you know how to say things differently.
Right.
And you assume if you say something one way, it means one thing. If you say something another way, the same three words, it means something different.
Right.
To say it's a history museum that's located in Buffalo is very different from saying it's a Buffalo History Museum.
Right.
Anyway, I didn't know the answer to the question, and that now I do know. It's a history museum about Buffalo. So it's a Buffalo history. I've driven this into the ground, haven't I?
No, but this is great. And people listening might not know that, you know, so that's great.
Well, I didn't know it. And I was like 75 years old when I heard it. So it's, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, on that topic, the history of stained glass, I mean, Buffalo has a rich history of stained glass, hence mm-hmm. having so many of those beautiful windows that you talk about. So I think that, yeah, I think people will be interested in this exhibit.
Because really, what else was there to do when you were in church when you were a kid, except look around with your jaw down going, wow, look at the colors and look at the... So yeah, I'm going to get off the couch for that.
Okay.
And it ends, when did you say it ended? January 17th?
14th.
Okay.
So you have some time.
Okay, cool. Anything else?
There's a really important kind of huge exhibit opening at SEPA. It's a heavy topic, but... Opening on January 20th, SEPA has been planning this massive project called The Power of Resilience and Hope, Photography of the Holocaust, Then and Now.
Wow.
And it's a multi-pronged project, from my understanding. There's phase one in January, and I believe phase two is in March. And the exhibition involved community outreach questions and photography and basically just calling attention to anti-Semitism in the U.S. in Buffalo, and then also having some outreach and activities that go along with that. And so we've got some coverage on it in Spree in the January-February issue that we've been talking about with SEPA for some time now. Sounds like a really important and unfortunately too relevant...
Yes, more and more relevant. Yes.
Exhibit for right now. Right. And so I wanted to give that a mention for sure.
And where is SIPA located for those who don't know, the are not familiar with the gallery?
It's right on Main Street in downtown Buffalo. It's one of those that you probably, when you're walking to and from Shays or something, you didn't notice it, but it's there. And if you look, it is right there at 617. Yeah. I've been there myself. Lovely space.
On the same side of the street as the Irish Classical. It's just down the street from that. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
I think so. I can't remember the address, but you just gave it. So that'll be fine.
Yeah, 617 Main Street.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's not particularly in keeping with the joy of the season, but let's face it, it's, as you said, all too relevant, unfortunately, more so this season. Okay, well, that sounds great. So the other part of this, and this is just sort of a bonus episode, it's going to be released the week after the previous episode, which was with Bobby Cook, who I had a wonderful time with.
I think I'm going to listen to it.
He's great. Anyway, this is just a little something, to be honest, so I can avoid having to release a podcast on December 26th, because that would be the next 2 week interval. So I'm just going to throw something out there the week before, just as a little, enjoy the holidays thing. And I thought it would be fun if we talked about some crazy family traditions in our family, maybe starting with things that are the most common.
Sure.
Because I've got something that's so bizarre. I'll save it nearly for the end.
Okay.
Let's start with the more common things. As I told you, I was raised Catholic. And in those days, when I was a kid, there was the no meat on Fridays thing. But there was also no meat on Christmas Eve.
I have heard of that.
So in my family, the tradition, and this goes back to the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
It's a crazy Italian tradition and my daughter has tried to duplicate it every year, but she just does. Okay, you had a shrimp, that's your first fish. Okay, here's some salmon on a cracker, salmon spread, that's your second fish. Because if you try to eat seven major dishes with fish, you're full by noon. But originally, the Feast of the Seven Fishes was because you couldn't eat meat on Christmas Eve.
Right.
So what we would do, and what a lot of families would do, is we would have fish on Christmas Eve, and then we would stay up till midnight. And some people would go to midnight mass.
Yes, my dad used to do that.
We would go to what was called, in St. Mark's Parish, it was called the Shepherd's Mass. It was the 1 o'clock mass, because that was not as crazy busy as the midnight mass.
Oh my God.
And then after that, we would come home and we would eat sausage. Italian sausage.
So what time are you going to bed?
Well, that's the other part of the story. This was at my aunt's house. She lived over on Parkside near Tillinghast.
Oh, yeah.
So we would go there. We'd go to St. Mark's for 1 a.m. mass. We'd come back and have Italian sausage. We'd get home about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we would open some presents right then and there.
No way!
On Christmas Eve. Because opening presents that night meant my parents could sleep in the morning, because we would all get up and play with our toys, and they just slept.
Well, yeah, they were up till 3 a.m.
That's right. There was none of that getting up in the morning and, the kids come down and wake you up at 5 a.m. Come on, Santa's been here. Let's go down and open the presents. No, we had already opened them at like 3 a.m. the night before.
So I have to ask, did you think Santa just stopped at your house earlier?
We believed that Santa stopped at the house while we were over at my aunt's house. See, we were over there having our Christmas Eve dinner, and because by the time we got home, it was, as you said, 3 a.m. or something.
Right.
And so, of course, we were one of Santa's first stops.
Right. Well, that's interesting because, I was always told he's not going to come till you're sleeping. You know what I mean? So you were awake. You were just eating sausage.
Yeah, we were eating sausage. So that was, and I know that sounds like that's a crazy story, but In that era, in the 50s and 60s, that's what you did, because you couldn't eat meat on Christmas Eve. Crazy. Wow. Just crazy. I know I said I would start with a story that was fairly common, but you've never heard of it because you're just a kid, basically.
Yeah, no, that's completely new to me. I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
And to think I don't eat meat any day.
and I've gotten away from it for, I have marked on my calendar what day I'm allowed to eat a cheeseburger. It's like once every 2 months I'll have a cheeseburger. So it better be a damn good cheeseburger.
Oh, absolutely.
So what was your normal tradition? What was your like common stuff that you guys did?
We've always put the tree up Thanksgiving weekend, like after mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, like on Black Friday or the next day. That's something we've always done. And it kind of endured because when we all started, you know, going to college, we'd always be home for that weekend. And, you know, even now my one brother lives in DC, but he was home for Thanksgiving. So we still do that. Mm-hmm. Even this year, my mom in her new house with a new tree, but we all went over and did it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty standard. I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, my daughter does that.
Yeah. Something that I thought was sort of original, but I think has sort of become more commonplace since COVID, is we would get in the car and drive around and look at Christmas lights, usually on Christmas Eve night or the night before. I've done that with both my mom and my dad. I've got interesting family traditions because my parents are divorced and both remarried.
A split family. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So throughout the years, it's been like, this was a tradition I did with my dad and this one I did with my mom. And sometimes, you know, we're all together, whatever. So my dad had taken us to do that a couple times and then he sort of stopped doing it. And then my mom kind of took it over. And as we got older, it evolved into, so we'd always bring like hot chocolate in the car with us. As we got older, yeah. Now it's like hot chocolate and Bailey's or coffee and Bailey's or, you know.
The drinks have matured as well as you have.
Yeah, but so that was something we were doing for a while. But I think when COVID hit and pandemic lockdown was going on, a lot of people did that because it was a way to go experience, you know. And there's also all those light shows that have drive-through options, like intentionally, the one at the fairgrounds and stuff. So I'm not sure how common it is. I think it's more common than it used to be, but that's something we still do that I think is really fun.
And did you have one house that you were always looking forward to? Like, oh, when do we get to the Smith's house? Because they always have the hugest, you know, yes. decorations outside. Yeah, we didn't do that very often, but they do it down in Atlanta. And there's always one house that you say, oh, when do you see the one that's coming at the next corner? And every year they seem to outdo themselves. And now it's all with inflatables. You know?
Yeah, those never did it for me.
Me neither. And they're huge. They're just like 12 feet tall and everything.
Have you seen the house on, I think it's on Morris in North Buffalo with that huge thing? It's a big tree, but made up of these like balls of light.
No.
Like it's this ginormous structure and they leave it up year round, but it's only lit up at Christmas. And then if you come early enough, because they turn it off toward later in the night, in this tree they have, there's also these balls and these things that are like look like light is shooting down. It is the most beautiful, spectacular thing. I drive by it intentionally as often as I can.
Oh, cool. I thought for a minute you were gonna say, and it's gaudy and awful.
Oh no.
But it's really spectacular.
It really is. I must have a picture of it somewhere. I'll send it to you after we're done. But it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Something else we do that I'm sure many people share this is we watch It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep.
That's like the must view. For a while, that was the one we watched on Christmas Eve. It was the last thing we did before bed.
Oh, sweet.
But that was one we always watched with my dad. And now as we've gotten older, we're doing like a separate Christmas weekend with my dad. So we'll probably watch it earlier. But it's funny because like the movie itself is the tradition. But I also remember things like my brother being like, I'm not into this. I'm going to shower now. So like the tradition was like most of us are watching the movie, Ethan's taking a shower. And it was always when my sister would go to her at the time boyfriend's like house to make an appearance for their Christmas Eve party.
Right.
So it's
right.
funny because the tradition was watching the movie, but I have all these associated memories.
Isn't that quick story about It's a Wonderful Life. I didn't see that movie till I was like in my 50s.
Really?
In our family, we'd never even heard of it. And my brother married a young lady from Memphis. He was down there working. And one Christmas we were all together and he said, have you guys heard of this? It's a Wonderful Life movie. And we're my other brother, we both just said, no, I don't know anything about it. So late in life, I discovered this incredible movie that everybody else had been, you know, enjoying for years and years and years. I had never even heard of it. Never seen
that
it.
That is wild. Well, my first experience with It's a Wonderful Life was actually, this is a bit of a story. Have you ever heard of Elmo Saves Christmas?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Okay. So that was like my everything. Oh. I mean, when it aired, I don't know what year it was. I want to say it had to be like 1996 or 97 because I was very young. And my mom recorded it on a tape from when it aired on TV. And I watched it every year. I sang the songs. Like, it was my favorite. I was a huge Sesame Street fan, and I was a huge lover of Christmas when you put them together. So I loved Elmo Saves Christmas. And in Elmo Saves Christmas, he is watching It's a Wonderful Life. And they've got tiny little snippets, like, I told you, I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you. And then they play the part where it's like, Bert, Ernie! And Bert and Ernie, like, look at the TV, like, what? Like, so I knew those little snippets from, like, practically birth, right? And so then we watched the movie, and I heard the lines that I've been hearing from Elmo Saves Christmas forever. I was like...
But now they're in the context of the movie, of the original movie. Oh, that is very cute. Very cute. Did you travel? In other words, did you visit out of town family at all for Christmas?
When I was growing up,
or for any holiday, I keep saying Christmas, but could be Hanukkah, could be Kwanzaa, could be anything.
Sure.
But for the holidays, did you visit out of town?
So when I grew up until I was about eight, I think. Yeah, eight and a half. I lived in New Jersey, and my dad's family is mostly all in New Jersey, but my mom's family is here in Buffalo, and so we would come up to my mom's sister's, my aunt's house for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But because we wouldn't be coming back for Christmas, we would kind of do both.
Ah.
So we would come up, we'd stay up overnight at my grandma's house or my aunt's house, usually my aunt's house, because then I remember waking up watching the parade with my cousins, and then like we'd help like tear bread for stuffing and stuff. And then we'd do Thanksgiving, and then I'm pretty sure on Thanksgiving night we would exchange Christmas presents with that side of the family. I feel like that's what I remember. And I have pictures. Like, we'd go, like, visit Santa at the mall with my grandparents in Buffalo when we came up. So, like, we've got pictures and videos of me in Christmas outfits at Thanksgiving time.
Right.
You know, it's funny because they say all the holidays, like, they're like, why are all the holidays crammed together at the end of the year? It's like, boom, boom, boom. But as a kid, I really think I was like, I don't know when these things actually are. Like, I just know that after Halloween, it's Thanksgiving, Christmas all the time.
Right. It's just like a giant snowball that just keeps getting bigger and bigger until it erupts with New Year's Eve.
Right. So we traveled then, but I think that's it. As an adult, I go down to my dad's family for Easter usually.
Yeah. Do you drive down?
Yep.
Yeah. See, my mother's family was from Jamestown. And I don't think it was every Christmas, but every now and then we would drive to Jamestown, maybe every other year or something, when we weren't doing Shepherd's Mass and sausages at midnight.
Shepherd's Mass.
We would drive to Jamestown, and I don't know if you know that route, but once you get off at Dunkirk, it's a two-lane Route 62 or Route 60 to Jamestown. And one time we got caught in a horrible, horrible snowstorm.
Oh, no.
And I'll never forget this. My father couldn't see out the front window. We ended up in a ditch, of course. And this lovely family, I'll never forget them. Their name were the Skinners. They had a house up on a hill, and they saw that we had, and they took us in.
Oh, my gosh.
On Christmas Eve week or whatever it was, and we spent like a day and a half at the Skinner's house, and they took us in on our way to Jamestown because we were out in the middle of nowhere, and they had this one, I mean, and it wasn't like a big castle or anything like that. It was just a, you know, like a split level house. And I remember very well trying to get to Jamestown and getting stuck in a tremendous snowstorm, the kind of snowstorm where you can't see out the window.
Right, right.
So you don't know where the road is, and you're all by yourself, and there's no street lights. It was pretty crazy.
But they took you in. That's so magical.
Wasn't it? Yeah. It's really a sweet story.
How many of them were there? Did they have kids also?
I remember that they had kids, but there were five of us, three boys, and mother and father, and then they had at least two kids.
Wow.
So there were nine or 10 people in the house.
Yeah.
And they fed us and we slept there and everything. And the next day, somebody got us out. I don't know, the next day or the day after, some tow truck went by and pulled us out. I don't remember. But it was just one of those freak things where the storm was just those 2 hours when we were traveling.
Right.
You know, so I got to tell you my craziest story.
Okay.
Back in the late 50s and early 60s, there was no such thing as a tree of different colors. In the early 70s and 80s, you could buy aluminum trees, and you shone different color lights on it. And so you had a green tree that turned into a purple tree that turned into a yellow. It was only a green tree, and they were all live trees. My mother got my poor father to spray paint a tree pink every year.
Oh my gosh.
He would go to Knob Hill Hardware in Cheektowaga, which was like 5 minutes from our house, and he would rent a compressor and a paint sprayer and buy a gallon of pink paint.
Oh my gosh.
He would set up newspapers in the garage, put the tree on the stand, and spray paint the tree pink because my mother had to have a pink tree. And of course, all of the bulbs were also pink. Most of the ornaments, not all of them, but most of the ornaments were pink. And I remember to this day that people would come to our house and it was the biggest look of amazement on their face because nobody no one had a painted tree, much less a pink tree. There, it just wasn't done in those days. Then, like after a few years of that, my mother discovered that, oh, well, you know, you could just paint it white because all the bulbs are pink anyway.
Sure.
So the tree still looked pink. And then as things got, as my father got older and my mother relented a little bit, we discovered that you didn't need to paint it at all. If it's all pink bulbs, the tree still looks, even if it's green.
Right.
So for like 10 years, this poor guy rented a paint compressor, an air compressor and a spray paint so he could spray the tree pink. And the picture I've chosen to be in our little title card or whatever Gina makes of it is a picture of me in front of, I hope you can see that it's pink, but it, the tree itself, it's either pink or white. Trees are all spray painted by my father.
Wow.
And it was just the most.
It wasn't like you had multiple trees. Was the tree and that it was pink.
It was the tree and it was spray painted pink and nobody else had a colored, much less painted tree except us because my mother.
She just loved pink.
She loved pink and she insisted that he spray paint the tree pink. And of course she had to sit it in the garage for 2 days while the paint dried. And also, of course, the tree died much sooner. So you ended up with all those tree bits on the floor much sooner because the poor thing had been sprayed to death.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That is
wild.
Isn't that the craziest thing you can imagine? And he must've really loved her because boy,
that is what I was about to say. I was literally about to say, it's really sweet when you think about it, though, like how much your dad wanted to make your mom happy that he went through all that for her.
Exactly. Exactly. It's I don't know how he did it. I don't know why he didn't just say, put some pink bulbs on it and leave it. Don't, it's not a big deal. No, he would rent a paint sprayer.
Wow.
And in those days, they were just gigantic electric compressors. Mm-hmm. And you could hear him out in the garage spray painting the tree. There was always the concept, or when's dad going to spray the tree? When's he going to, the tree's in the garage. When's he going to spray it? Well, this weekend, because we can't put it up until the tree's been spray painted. And then we got to wait 2 days for it to dry.
Everyone knew the timeline.
Well, we knew that we needed to have the timeline. We can't put the tree up until it's been spray painted and dried.
Right. Obviously. Oh my gosh.
Craziness.
That's crazy. So funny.
Do you have anything that crazy?
No. There is nothing that crazy. The only other, I mean, I have a couple other things, but the one I think is kind of coolest is, so I'm sure lots of people do advent calendars.
Sure.
But my mom actually made one. She cross-stitched it. And so it was like this one column cross-stitch advent calendar that she'd made with all of the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it had little strings on it. It had pads. It's still hanging at her house. But the intention is that you tie Hershey Kisses.
Oh, Hershey Kisses.
Onto the strings. So all the kisses hang. And so when we were growing up, we had to take turns, you know, like, Jommy's bringing Ethan Cole. Jommy's bringing Ethan Cole. Like, everyone gets your one Hershey Kiss on your day. But one year, instead of candy, she typed up little scrolls of paper with things she loved about each of us.
Oh.
And so on your day, like, you got to open it and it was like, Sabrina has a big heart or something like that. Or, you know, Jarmer's always asking logical questions, or I'm sure they were better than that, but you know, and that was the advent calendar that year, and I loved that year. It was so special.
Like, that's waiting very sweet
turn, and yeah.
At first, I thought you were going to say, and every day we got to eat a little Hershey's Kiss, and it was, you know, this chocolate. And I thought, oh, that's nice. That's a nice innovation. But now to add on top of it that she put a little something in there that talked about what she loved about Sabrina or what she loved about John.
Yeah. So that was only 1 year, I should specify. The Hershey Kisses were the standard. And then 1 year, instead of the kisses, she did the things. It was just a 1 year thing. But now my brother, who's 23, has told her the Hershey Kisses really aren't worth it now. Like, I guess he's realized he could go to the store and buy a bag of them. Whereas when you were a kid, you were like, that's where the chocolate is. So this year she did Lindt truffles because apparently those are better motivation than Hershey Kisses.
I see.
But the advent calendar is still hanging.
Oh, man. Okay. So Hershey Kisses became too commonplace and you can buy them at CVS. They're, you know, $1,000 for $10, you know.
The magic died for him. I would still do it for the Hershey Kiss. My mom gave me an advent calendar this year from Sweet Whisk, which is unfortunately closing at the end of the year. Oh. And I think that's why she got us all one. And man, those bonbons are so good.
It must have been ambitious for your mom to write something for every day, for each day that was yours, your day or your sister's.
Mm-hmm.
And I give her a lot of credit for doing that.
Oh yeah, me too. I'll never forget it. And she was still scrapbooking at the time. So when she scrapbooked like that year of Christmas, she put all the little scrolls in the book.
Oh my goodness.
So it's all still preserved. I should go look at that page.
That's very sweet.
I haven't seen it in a while. Yeah, she's a keeper.
That's a I wonder if she ever did anything with that writing talent.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. Hmm. But we should end it on that because that's a very sweet story.
Sure. Yeah. I've talked plenty, I'm sure.
Well, not as much as I did, but I had such crazy Christmases. Listen, I hope you have a nice holiday.
Thanks, you too.
And you see everybody and, you know, and everybody's happy and healthy. And I will see you again in the new year.
Yes.
Presumably.
Hope you have wonderfully happy holidays.
Thanks very much, Sabrina.
Thank you.
I hope you had a good time. And I hope that you will have a lovely holiday. And
yes, you too.
Say hi to that the mom for me.
That emerging writer, Donna Hoke.
Take care.
Bye, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is... Oh, never mind.
Listen, I hope you enjoyed that little conversation. We had fun talking about all the crazy stuff that went on in our past. And I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday, whatever holiday you're celebrating. No matter what it is, if you're just celebrating the winter, the end of the hot summer days, and the onslaught of the cold wind. Well, who the hell's going to celebrate that? Never mind. Have a wonderful holiday season and the happiest of New Year's. I hope it's a great year for all of us. And we'll see you back here on January 2nd when we have our special, as promised, Jerry Marr tribute. We'll have some people talking about Jerry and just to get on the record what this great guy did for Buffalo Theater. Here on Off-Road with me, Pete Pomisano.